Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be talking about NFL Week 15. We will touch on last week as well, if necessary. We will have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will also have our college football segment. And we will have Best for Last is back with a discussion on the NBA. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. At JTime Sports for all of your breaking news updates and coverage. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Welcome back into the Just In Time Sports Podcast, the audio edition. As you guys know, the YouTube show is alive and active. Of course, it has been linked in several episode descriptions, and I plan on linking that again, or at least linking the link tree into the episode descriptions. You can access all the social medias and podcasting platforms all in one spot. But as you guys heard in the intro, we'll talk about the NFL, we'll talk about a little gambling, we'll talk about some college football, we'll touch on the NBA, which is about what most people are doing, touching on the NBA, no one's really watching, but we'll get to that point. We'll talk about the upcoming week in the NFL. So, of course, this show being an instant release show, it's going to be a Saturday show. I don't want to spend too much time, if any time, week 14. You guys have heard about that all week. Who cares about that, right? So let's jump into NFL week 15. We'll talk about Thursday night because it was just a couple of days ago. It was a rain-soaked slob fest, mostly a snooze fest. It wasn't even good defense. It was just bad offense. Between the Niners and the Rams, which considering the head coaches are Shanahan and Kyle and Sean McVay, very rare to see a defensive or an offensive snooze fest between the two of them, but that's exactly what was delivered. No touchdowns, six field goals combined between the two. Rams ultimately win 12-6. The Niners' season of disaster continues to pile up. Of course, there's no CMC the rest of the year. Of course, Brandon Ayuk was hurt earliest in the year. This game, Devondre Campbell just decides I'm done and walks off the field with the training staff. Told the team he didn't want to play anymore. Which we've seen this a few times over the past decade. Usually it's because guys retire. Like it was one guy just looked up and was like, I'm done. Like he just retired in the middle of the locker room. Like it was wild. You don't finish playing, he was like, nah, I'm good. Like, you know, like he retired in the middle of the locker room. We've seen LeGarrette Blount famously walked out on the Steelers. He famously quit on the Steelers and gets picked up by the Patriots and scores three touchdowns and wins the Super Bowl. So we've seen it a couple of times. Antonio Brown's famous quit on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Jets. So we've seen this a few times over the past decade. Guys just quitting. Devondre Campbell's was thought to be an injury, but it came out right after the game. It was not. So that is something that definitely is different. It's interesting. But, you know, Kyle Shanahan, I've never seen a coach address it right after the game. And that's how I don't remember. I mean, you had to address the Antonio Brown thing. But, you know, Shanahan just volunteered. Like, yep, he's, you know, he just told us he wasn't going to play anymore. He didn't want to play anymore. And so we sent him to the locker room and, you know, that's probably it. And then the teammates being like, yeah, that's some punk-ish. Like, you know, he probably going to get cut soon. Like, that was some punk stuff. And then you got, and then, you know, it comes out, like, the next day, like, all the stuff most of the night is dealing with. You got a guy who just lost his child who's still playing. You got a guy who's on ankles as bad still playing. Like, so many different things happening with the Niners organization. And for the guy to just walk off in Devondre Campbell, definitely did not sit well in the locker room. Shanahan came out this weekend and was like, yeah, he's not going to play for us anymore. We're just trying to figure out the best way to get it done, whether that's to cut him, just to make him inactive. Like, we're trying to figure that out, but he's not playing for us anymore. And that's the kind of move that, like, LeGarrette Blount was a special case because he ended up landing with Belichick. But that's the kind of move that no one in the league respects. Like, if you're battling an injury and you get a little quote-unquote soft on an injury and you don't want to play, that's a different conversation. But just to walk off mid-game, you tell my team, I don't play anymore. Like, that's something no one in the league respects. That'll probably end his NFL career. Now, he's – Devondre Campbell's an older player. So I think it ultimately ends his career, but insane. But it kind of speaks about the Niners' season and that their season is pretty much over. The Rams, however, have found new life. They keep finding ways to win games, ugly, pretty, high scoring, low scoring. To go from the shootout they had last week with the Bills, 44-42, to come into this game and win it 12-6. Huge win for them. The kind of game that can really build momentum, or continue to build momentum. You know, it's another feather in the cap kind of game. So huge for the Rams. But that is pretty much all of the recap we're going to do here. Let's jump into the NFL Week 15, this Sunday slate of games. So let's jump right into Jets and Jags. Now, this is a game of Tankathon. It's in our Jags pack, so we're not going to pick it, right? But it's a game that, if you're an organization, you're kind of on two halves of the same coin. And it's not like one's going up and one's going down. They kind of met in the middle. Sometimes you see teams, they're both 3-10, I believe. Sometimes you see games where one 3-10 team is like, oh, they're really young and they're showing some promise. And they're kind of, and they're trying to trending up. And the other team is like, oh, no, this team's a disaster. And they happen to both meet at 3-10. This is a game of teams on the same side, of two opposites of the same coin. So the Jets are a disaster. Right, the Jets have nothing positive going for them, except a couple of decent players. They have Elijah Vera Tucker, they have Garrett Wilson, they have Breece Hall, and Quinnen Williams, and they have a couple of guys on defense. Right, but for the most part, they have 5 to 7 good players, and then there's nonsense. Your coaching staff is fired and or bad. Your management team is bad. Your ownership is bad. Your fan base is all right. You're the second team in a stadium, so your support in the city is bad. Like, it's not great if you're the Jets. The Jaguars, however, they have a lot of positives. I like their owner in Shad Khan. He's stable. Their GM is okay. Don't like Dougie P all that much as far as the coach, but, you know, that could be better. Your roster has some talent on it. Evan Ingram. Their roster is also not great. Trevor Lawrence, I still believe in. You know, they have a good left tackle. So they have some roster improvements they can make as well. Obviously, they'll allow them to be 3-10, but you know, they have solid support in the community. They're rebuilding it. They're building a brand new sports facility and complex from the NFL team. So there's a lot more positives in Jacksonville than there is in New York. How do you get to 3-10? If you have a lot of positive, you have injuries. Number one, that's the number one thing. They have injuries, Trevor Lawrence and multiple other players. Number two, you have a coach that I don't think is that good anymore in Doug Peterson. I think he's a good guy. But I just don't think he's there anymore. I think he lost his fastball. I think getting fired from Philly might have took some of the confidence. So that's how you end up where you are. And I just think that, you know, they're just, again, they need an improvement in the roster. I think they need to I think, you know, they need to spend a lot of money in free agency and hit on the draft pick. Ultimately, the two teams that kind of need to fix their stuff the same way. If you're the Jets, clean out the top of the organization. Coach, GM, management team, hell, training staff. Clean the top of the org out. If you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, do the same thing. Now come back to they both need to spend money in free agency, and they both have to hit their draft picks. Now the Jets have to hit draft picks more than free agency. The Jaguars have a young style at the quarterback, so they can lean a little bit more on free agency and try to win fast. The Jets need sustainability right now, so they need to hit on draft picks. But again, it's two sides of the same coin. Both should be tanking their way. Jets trying to tank their way into Shador or Cam Ward. The Jaguars trying to tank their way into Travis Hunter. I mean, it's pretty much Will Campbell or Emory Jones. Like, they need to be tanking their way into a player that can help them immediately. Bucks and Chargers, a game that is not in Jack's pack. Bucks on the road and Chargers. Now, the Chargers, I picked against them last week, and part of it was because I didn't believe in their home field advantage. You know, they have notoriously been the site of either neutral site or home road games, as I call it. Like, we're like, yeah, it's listed as a home game, but there's way more people here for the other team. And so that's where a lot of their games feel like they're played. If they feel like they're played, it's home road games, for lack of a better term. Where it's like, yeah, that's exactly what you would want them to do, is to have, you know, home field advantage if you are an NFL team. But the Chargers, being the second team in LA, they just don't have that sustained fan base most of the time. And so if there's a team, especially a closer team, it feels like a road game. However, they were able to make it feel like a home game against Buffalo, and there's a very similar travel from Tampa. So I think the Chargers are going to play this game really, really well. I think they played the Chiefs incredibly well. They got chiefed. The Chief on this magical march to victory found a way to defeat the Chargers. The Chargers team, I think, that outplayed them for most of that game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're attempting to basically ice the NFC South. Carolina's a joke. The Saints, viable-ish in the divisional race. I believe they're two games back and don't own the tiebreaker. So that's not good if you're the Saints. And I can't even think of the other team in the NFC South. Oh, Atlanta. Atlanta probably should have won this division, but Kirk Cousins has gone into the pits of hell as far as playing-wise. They're going to stick with them, probably because of finances. But I could also see a very real scenario where the Falcons move on after this year, eat the money for 1 year, and basically just say, okay, Michael Penix's contract, you know, ends a year early kind of thing, because Penix is already sitting there ready to go. And you can't continue to just throw money. You can't continue just to throw money at the problem in Kirk Cousins, especially when you took the opportunity to go ahead and draft Michael Penix Jr. with a top 10 pick. So this is definitely something to keep our eye on as far as Atlanta. But back to the game, Bucks and Chargers. Like I said, the Bucks are looking to put a stranglehold in this division. I think the winner is the Chargers. I think they're looking to keep pace in a crowded AFC. They can't catch the Chiefs. The Chiefs locked up the division already. So I think the Chargers just aiming at this point to try and get a high wild card spot. Steelers at Eagles. It is in our Jack's pack, so we're not going to pick it. This is a game between teams that are overachieving. If you would have told me that the Eagles or the Steelers would have had this kind of record, I would have laughed. Like, heavily laughed. Like one of those Santa Claus belly shaking, I can't believe, please stop it, please make it stop kind of laugh. Like, there is no way I would have even considered the Eagles or the Steelers, honestly, having this kind of record. But instead, that's where we are. And so it's going to be a huge game between the two of them. I said I won't pick it just yet. But these are two teams that are overachieving, in my opinion. I love the coach in Pittsburgh and Mike Tomlin. I hate the coach, but love the roster in Philadelphia due to Nick Sirianni. So game kind of two teams that are playing really good football at the same time. And yet, two teams I don't think anybody had with this kind of record early in the season. Packers at Seahawks, a game that is not in our Jack's Pack, so we can pick it. The Green Bay Packers go on the road to face Seattle Seahawks. Now, the Packers on the road is not a huge problem, and Jordan Love has been actually a pretty solid road quarterback. And depending on what Seahawks team you get, depending on how strong that 12th man is, they're going to be loud, they're going to be raucous. But the 12th man always feels a little better whenever – the 12th is always a little more dangerous whenever the Legion of Boom was there, whenever Russell Wilson's in his prime, whenever, you know, Pete Carroll was rolling the program. They feel just a little less dangerous these days. But I think the Packers are a really good road team. However, Geno Smith has been playing winning football. And he's going out there every single week and just finding a way. Literally finding a way to win games over and over and over and over again. They're just finding ways to win games. And a lot of times it's Geno Smith spearheading that change, spearheading that victory. But I just don't think he gets it done against the Packers here. I think the Packers win the game. I think they win it by about 10. The Seahawks kind of had it easy last week when it came down to the Arizona Cardinals, and I was one of the few people on that side of the betting world, really, when it came down to the Cardinals. It just didn't feel like the Cardinals were going to win that game. And then sometimes you have games where you're like, that team's not going to win. Rare that it happens in such a manner, but it that's exactly what went down. And congratulations to the Seahawks. I just think some of that magic begins to run out. And the Packers take the victory. And then Bills versus the Lions. I won't pick it in Jack's Pack, but this is a hell of a game. This is a game that early in the season you have circled. You have gold starred. You have, you know, whatever it is. You have this game as a potential playoff seeding decider. Now, of course, one's in the AFC, one's in the NFC. But this is one of those games where, you know, having the win over a team that has less than 5 losses is a huge feather in the cap because most of the other league didn't have that win. So Bills versus Lions is huge in terms of how each team could be seeded in their respective respective conferences. Now, both are going to win their division. So, Bills have already clinched the AFC East. Lions have they're only fighting the Vikings for the North. And I think the Lions are going to ultimately win the North. But if the Bills were to beat the Lions, now it opens up the door for the Vikings. So, this is the kind of game that the Lions could look back on and go, man, we win that game with the 2 seed. We lost the game with the 5th seed on the road in the first round. Now, it's on the road at Tampa, so not the world's best, not the world's worst spot, but it's still on the road when you could have been at home hosting a 6 seed. So that is definitely the situation there. But again, we will pick it in Jack's Pack. So don't worry about that. We will pick it. But quick hitters, Odell Beckham and the Miami Dolphins did mutually agree to part ways. Odell Beckham will clear waivers on Monday, where he will be free to sign anywhere he wants. Strong opinion believes that he will ultimately land with the Los Angeles Rams. Trayvon Diggs has been ruled out with a leg injury, so he will not play this week against the Carolina Panthers. Harrison Butker is back for the Kansas City Chiefs. He has been activated off injury reserve. The team has consequently released kicker Matt Wright, who actually kicked pretty well for them. Carson Palmer is going to coach his high school alma mater, very similar to Teddy Bridgewater, who is 1 win away from winning the state title with his alma mater. Carson Palmer has decided to go head coach his alma mater. So Carson Palmer is going back to school. He joins another legend going back to school. And Randy Moss, prayers for Randy Moss, man. Prayers and thoughts for the NFL legend as he revealed that he has been battling bile duct cancer. He has gone through surgery. He's on the road to recovery now. So prayers and thoughts with Randy Moss, man. Absolute legend, absolute light in the football world. And we're thinking about Randy and hoping he gets better, praying he gets better. But up next, we're going to shift to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to get into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Admittedly, it was a bad week. However, I put together an 8-team Moneyline parlay. That was one leg off. Thank you, Buffalo Bills. But admittedly, Jack's Pack had a bad week, and it brought our teetering percentage crashing down. So we basically are now, we went 1-3-1 last week. We had our third tie of the year. We haven't had three ties in the history of Jack's Pack. And now we've had our third tie in a year. So we are now 36-31-3. Which brings our percentage down to 51%. However, if you are in the community that doesn't count ties, that the money just brings, that the money goes right back to you. We are, let's see, 36 divided by 67. We're at 54% if you don't count the ties. So most people don't count the ties, right? Because the tie, and if you put down a unit or two units on the bet, the money would come back to you. It was a tie. House didn't win, you didn't win. Nobody, you know, you didn't lose. So the house didn't win, you didn't win. So considering that is the case, we are at 54%. So we are right below where we wanted to be. Because, you know, the goal is to be at 56% and above. We're at 54. We keep getting these ties, but ties don't kill us. They just don't help us. So not bad at all there. But let's get right into these numbers. So our first number of the week, Jets -3 at Jags. Take the Jets. This is a situation of whose bad was better. Honestly, that's how it felt. Whose bad was better? The best quarterback in this game is either 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers or Mac Jones. I'm going to take Aaron Rodgers. The best receiver in this game is Garrett Wilson. The best singular offensive lineman in this game is probably Elijah Vera Tucker. Breece Hall is supposed to be back, so he's the best running back in this game. You know, you start going through the positions. The Jets have the best of the stuff. Probably coach would go to Jacksonville, which, hey, whatever. But, like, the Jets have the best of the stuff, so I'm going to lean Jets here -3 over the Jags. Cowboys +3 over the Panthers. I don't understand how the Cowboys are underdogs in this game. I get it. The best receiver in this game is easily CeeDee Lamb. There's no one on Carolina who can guard him. The better running back in this game is probably Doddle. I mean, the Panthers running backs make it close, but probably Doddle. I think Bryce Young's better than Cooper Rush, but the gap isn't that far. McCarthy versus Canellis, I think is the name of the Panthers guy. McCarthy by a little bit. I don't know how the Panthers, I mean, you're saying neutral site they're even. I would think neutral site probably Cowboys -3. So I think this game should have been an even line. I got the Cowboys +3 here. Take the Cowboys. Steelers +5.5 at the Eagles. Take the Steelers. This is not a slander to the Eagles. I think the Eagles win this game. However, I think the Steelers cover the 5.5. Mike Tomlin, two things didn't happen to Mike Tomlin. He didn't have losing seasons. He doesn't get blown out. 7 points, I mean, over a touchdown in the NFL is a blowout in effectiveness. I think the Steelers here cover the 5.5. This game feels 27-23, you know. 24-20. That's how this kind of game feels. This game was 4.5. I'd probably go Eagles, but at 5.5, if you can tease up to 7, your bet's probably really, really safe. You can tease it to 7, but I've got Steelers +5.5 here. Take the Steelers. Lions -2.5 versus the Bills. It's a home game for the Lions. Take the Lions. If they had to go deal with Orchard Park and whatever in the incarnation goes on in Buffalo this time of year, I would say take the Bills, but it's an indoor game. It's going to be a track meet. Whenever the track meet, one team has Sonic and one doesn't. along with Amon-Ra and the rest of that crew. So I got the Lions here to protect the home field advantage and to keep pushing away the Vikings in that division. Bills have already locked up their division. Not saying they're going to be any less motivated. However, the one seed's probably gone in because of Kansas City. So at that point, so was the bye. At that point, you're just keeping away whoever wins the AFC, the western side, that's Kansas City. So whoever wins the AFC North, which is probably Pittsburgh at the moment. I think Pittsburgh's going to hold the North. And then the South is a joke. So you're not even worried about who comes out of the South. It's either Jacksonville, Indy, Tennessee, or Houston. I mean, Houston's only viable program out of there. They're the four seed. The one seed's gone. So you're really just fighting whoever wins the North for the two and the three. In the grand scheme of matters, is who's your divisional road game or home game. So I think there's a little less motivation in Buffalo right now. I think Detroit, because they know they have a legitimate shot at the one seed and they have a legitimate shot, they have to fight Minnesota tooth and nail for their division. And then they're going to win this game by more than a field goal. So take the Lions. And then Vikings -7 versus the Bears. This is all slander to the Bears. It's a joke of an organization. And this is full belief in the Vikings somehow, some way, overtaking the Lions and winning their division. I think the NFC will end up going through Philly. And then I think it'll end up going through ultimately to go through Minnesota next. And that's going to be hard to go into Minnesota with that defense and beat them. And I think the Bears are just going to not score enough points. I mean, I don't see the Bears scoring over 13, 17 if they're lucky. I don't see, you know what I'm saying? But that's two touchdowns. I don't know how they get the two touchdowns unless it's bad Darnold. And Darnold gifts him a pick six and then sits him on the goal line for another one. I just don't see the Bears going over realistically 17, which means the Vikings 24. With that defense, rookie quarterback, bad infrastructure, fired head coach. This feels like a Vikings blowout. So Vikings -7, take the Vikings. So I'll run through the numbers one more time. Jets -3 over the Jags. Cowboys +3 over the Panthers. Steelers +5.5 over the Eagles. Lions -2.5 over the Bills. Vikings -7 over the Bears. Up next, we'll jump into college football and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to jump into college football. So, as of the past 6 weeks plus, we've been doing the college football 2-minute drill, just kind of hitting on topics quickly in the college football world. However, this week we're not going to do that. We're going to actually do a full college football segment. So the big news, because they had major news coming out of college football, it's transfer portal time, it's coaches getting jobs time, so on and so forth. And the big one, of course, Bill Belichick has gone back to school. He has accepted the University of North Carolina head coaching position. Saying Bill Belichick is coaching a college program would have been laughable a week ago. Honestly, like, that's laughable a week ago. That's laughable. Maybe, okay, the smoke started a week ago. So 3 weeks ago, that's a joke that Bill Belichick would ever, if anyone ever thought of the idea that Bill Belichick was going to be coaching college football, I would have given a hearty laugh. Especially if it's not like he didn't get Bama or he didn't get LSU or he didn't get, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a situation where he netted, one of the major programs, a Florida State, a Florida, a Bama, an LSU, an Ohio State, a Notre Dame, you know, somewhere where it's like a USC, somewhere where it was major that he would land, he got North Carolina, which can be it could be a sleeping giant. We know what they do in basketball. They're really good at other sports as well. Football, they've never, to me, felt like a priority on the campus. However, they committed a lot to Bill Belichick. There was a rumor of a 400-page manifesto, a 400-page list of things he want done. I don't know how true that is. However, they did financially commit to Bill Belichick and this project. For instance, he got a 5-year, $50 million contract. So he jumps in the mix at $10 million a year. $1 million base with $9 million in supplemental income. So the $1 million comes from the school. $9 million comes from guaranteed endorsements. He had to do, you know, TV appearances, radio appearances, blah, 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 blah. But he gets $10 million a year for being head coach in North Carolina. Now, interesting things. A few interesting things. There is easy outs on both sides. For instance, the first 3 years of this deal is guaranteed. The full 5 years is not. So if this goes horribly left, let's say in 2 years, Carolina could fire him for all of... they can fire him for all of $10 million or whatever there's left on the contract, because only the first 3 years are guaranteed. After that, he becomes an at-will coach. Like, he could coach a game, they could fire him and don't owe him anything else. I mean, so that situation there. Also, the buyout for Belichick is prior to June 1st, 2025. On his side... Not on the team side, on his side. If he walks before June 1st, 2025, he owes the school $10 million. Okay? If after June 1st, 2025, so again, this is next summer in June. He has not coached a game. It is $1 million for him to leave. $1 million. So his deal starts now. He's gonna make a million. He's gonna make multiple million before he ever coaches the game there. He could go to the NFL this summer for $1 million. He can go anywhere he wants this summer. I don't think it's college, but he can go anywhere he wants for $1 million. Now, he said in the interview, "I didn't come here just to leave." Because they asked him, they was like, "Yo, the details are kind of out. What if, you know, NFL job calls in the summer? Hey, Bill wants you to come be our NFL head coach. Do you dip?" And he's like, "I didn't come here just to leave." Now, I think that that is a consideration, but also it's in the contract. He can easily get out. He has a home connection there. His father was an assistant coach in North Carolina in like the 50s and 60s. So he grew up in that. He has pictures in the stadium. Reportedly, his first words, jokingly, was "beat Duke" or "Duke sucks" or something like that. Like, you know, so he has a connection there. So I think it was another place. He might, you know, oh, NFL's caller came out. Now, reportedly, he did inquire about the Jets job. But hey, so he has that in his repertoire. He could get into $3.5 million. Back to his contract, though, I don't think he's gonna leave after, you know, before the season starts. I think he's gonna do at least a year. Maybe two. Now, he set it up, and we'll get into that, but he set it up to where Stephen Belichick, if he leaves Washington, where he is right now as the D.C., is named coach in waiting of North Carolina right after Bill. So it goes from Bill, it gets handed right to Stephen. And then there's reportedly he's going to bring in Josh McDaniels' brother as a key member of the staff. He's going to keep on staff Freddie Kitchens, who was a former head coach of the Browns, tight end coach in the league. He's at Carolina. Bill's going to keep him on staff. And also, he is looking to bring in Matt Patricia in a good role. He's hired a former Patriots personnel guy, GM. So, we'll get into that in a second. We're going to jump back into some key points of his contract. He has up to $3.5 million worth of bonuses annually that he can get to. Up to $350,000 for winning 12 games. So if he wins 8 games, he gets $150,000. He wins 9 games, he gets $200,000. Every win after that, up to 12 wins, is another $50,000. He wins a conference. He gets to the conference championship game. He gets $200,000. He wins it, $300,000. A bowl appearance is $150,000. An elite bowl appearance is $350,000. Now, again, this is the greater amounts. He makes it. He makes the college football playoff. $750,000. He wins the first round. He gets $1 million. He makes to the semis. He gets 1.25. He makes it to the championship game. 1.5. He wins the natty. $1.75 million. And the final CFP poll, if he's ranked $250,000, all and it's structured at $50,000 to $75,000, all the way up to top five, he gets $500,000. So if he were to win the national championship, he would collect pretty much $3.5 million. But the key thing I want to talk about is why would a guy like Bill Belichick, who's been in the pros since he was in his 20s, who's been in the NFL since he was for 40 some odd years, why would he go to college? Because that was looked at as a downgrade. I mean, Stephen A. Smith said it was beneath him to go to North Carolina. That, you know, he's the greatest NFL coach ever and you coach college? You know, that it was seen as beneath him from Stephen A. Smith. I say the school to me was a bit low. Like if it was one of the blue bloods, your Michigan, your LSUs, your Ohio States, your Bamas, your Miamis. Okay. You could sell me on that. UNZ? So, a USC would have been, a UCLA would have been something. They're not a blue blood in football, but, you know, the name recognition. UNC, North Carolina, but then you bring in the family ties and you bring in the commitment. Number one thing that Bill Belichick wanted to do, their NIL at North Carolina was $4 million a year. To put into perspective how low that is at the major college level, Bryce Underwood cost $3 million at Michigan, and he got outbidded from LSU. So that's just for putting into perspective of what's going on around the country. Reportedly, North Carolina has agreed to up the NIL for football to $20 million a year annually. I don't know where they're getting it from, whether it's Jordan sponsorships, private donations, whatever. They have agreed $20 million a year going to football. Boom. They've also, based on the new revenue sharing model, the $20.5 million is available. They have given $13 million to football. So now, effectively, Bill Belichick has a salary cap, quote unquote, of $33.5 million. Because I have $13.5 million directly subsidized from the school as part of the new revenue sharing model, and I have $20 million in NIL. So I have $33.5 million per year to put together a roster. Right? That feels like a salary cap. He also gets $10 million a year for an assistant coach pool. That's a lot. So Bill's making 10. His assistants can't make up the 10. If I'm Bill, I go to them and say, hey, every dollar I don't spend goes into the NIL fund. Because think about it. The highest paid assistant in the country, I think it's Blake Baker. He's the highest paid, like decent. He's making like $2.5 million. So if you pay an assistant, let's say you get your son in, $2 million. You get McDaniels' brother as your OC, $1.75. You're not spending $4 million, especially in commander, cost you another $1 million. And then your assistant, your position coaches, you know, you may spend all $10 million in your assistant pool. That's cool. All right. Strength and conditioning staff is $1 million. That feels a bit low. Sure, the conditioning coaches by themselves make $1 million these days. That feels a bit low. I think the top guy is making like $2.5 million or something like that, $1.2 million or something like that. So $1 million for strength and conditioning staff feels a bit low. I would definitely try to pull some of that money into strength and conditioning from the assistant coaching pool, but whatever, right? Strength and conditioning staff is $1 million. He gets a staff salary support pool of $5.3 million. So if the general manager, I think his general manager costs him $2.5 or $3 million, he says another $2 million for dedicated scouts, for dedicated recruitment staff, so on and so forth. Your director of operations is in that money as well. I don't care about the moving expenses or I discuss salary pool. So that is what Bill Belichick is walking into at North Carolina, which is why I say he can win immediately. He has $33.5 million per year as far as salary cap, and he has the ability to bring in NFL-level guys to his program and run it like an NFL program. They're going to be structured. He's already talked about how it wants to be a pipeline to the NFL. It's going to be structured like it's going to be in the NFL. Like, he's already said he wants his program to look like the NFL. So this is going to be huge. If anybody knows how to build from the NFL, it is Bill Belichick. Year one, it's going to be rough. But I think by year two or year three, you're looking at a 9-plus win program, 10-plus win program, outside playoff contender. They may even get into a playoff game. And with Case, you give Bill Belichick 3 weeks for one team, it's going to be hard to beat them, right? So that's going to be something that I'm going to be watching very carefully, North Carolina. The Heisman Show is tonight. It is going to go down to Travis Hunter and Ashton Dente. One is the AP Player of the Year. The other is the Walter Camp winner. And I think that you look at, and there's an argument going on, you know, oh, Dente should get it. Why? This is about the best player and the best season in college football. Travis Hunter won the award, disputed or not. He won the award for best receiver in college football. Dente won the award for best running back in college football. Dente wins the award for best offensive player in college football. Great. The problem is Travis Hunter won the award for best defensive player in college football. Amongst the best versatile player in college football. Like, he won 6 awards, 7 awards. Like an awards fest for him. Dente's got 2. Like, I get it. He won the best. Travis Hunter won the best defensive player in his conference. Dente won the best player and as offensive player in his conference. Dente, in probably any other year, wins the Heisman. The problem is Colorado had the best player in the freaking country in Travis Hunter. He's going to win the Heisman. The Heisman's over. He's minus like 4,000 or something like that betting on him. I wish I would have put money on him early in the season. But hey, it is what it is. Because if I had to bet early, I would have bet Shador. But like, he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. It's not up for debate. And people talk about, you know, they're trying to discredit him with all these different pieces of Hunter. And they're like, we've never seen Dente before. Yeah, we have. It's called Melvin Gordon. And Melvin Gordon didn't win the Heisman. He lost to Marcus Mariota, who had a more versatile, better year. It happens. All right? It's hard for a running back to win the Heisman. Usually it takes a down year or historic numbers at a big program. While his numbers were historic, he did do it at Boise State. Right? He did do it on a boatload of carries. In some game, early in the year, when he was hitting for 18, oh, he got 17 carries for 5 touchdowns, 200 yards. Okay, that was insane. But then he played his typical competition, and it became 37-201 and 2 touchdowns. 35 for 190. You know what I'm saying? The yards per carry fell. The touchdowns per game fell. Travis Hunter just went higher and higher and higher. Like, it is what it is, people. Travis Hunter is the Heisman Trophy winner. Sorry to be the bearer of obvious news, but Travis Hunter is the Heisman winner. Rich Rodriguez returns to West Virginia and lamented in the press conference going to Michigan and leaving West Virginia. He's not the only coach to have done that, and my brain has gone blank. But there's another coach who came back to his old school too, and he said it too. Like, yeah, I should have never left. Like, you know, basically, don't chase happy or don't try to do better than happy. And I'm gonna see if I can follow Dan Mullins at UNLV, but that's not the coach I was looking for. Rich Rod back to Michigan. Hold on, I'm scrolling through Just in Time Sports because I know we have it. Oh man, I cannot find it right now. It is betraying me. But there was a coach who went back, and his thing was like, yeah, don't try to outdo happiness. Like, if you are somewhere and you're happy, just be happy. Like, you know, whenever you get to trying to beat happiness, that's when it gets too far, and that's when you start to lose your joy in the business. And it's just, if you're happy somewhere, you're feeding your family, don't try to outdo happy. And that was ultimately what Rich Rod said in his interview. Marshall has opted out of the Independence Bowl in Shreveport against Army due to the fact that they had a coaching change, number one, and more than 25 players on their team have jumped in the transfer portal, and so they physically don't really have a roster. So they've opted out of their bowl game against Army in Shreveport. So now the Independence Bowl is going through the process of calling and finding 5-7 teams with high FPI to see if they want to get into the bowl. And I'm sure they're going to swing some more of the pot to Army as a result of Marshall opting out. And then the big news, of course, in college football is the college football playoff round one is next week. We're going to dive into this a lot more next week, but I just want to give you guys a quick preview of the games. We have Notre Dame hosting Indiana in round one early right now. I'm feeling Notre Dame in that game. Texas hosting Clemson. I'm going to tell you now and then, Texas is going to win that game. Ohio State is hosting Tennessee. I am going back and forth on this game. I'm leaning Tennessee right now, but it would not shock me if the Ohio State pulls it out in the horseshoe. And then Penn State is going white out against SMU. They're the better team. Penn State is going to win that game. So Texas and Penn State are going to win their games for sure. I think Notre Dame is better than Indiana. I'm going to go with Notre Dame right now there for sure. And then Ohio State and Tennessee feels like a coin flip. But up next, we're going to dive into the NBA and talk about what is going on and why they seem to can't get people to watch. Welcome in to the show. Welcome in to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Absolutely great show so far. We're going to jump to the NBA. Talk about why people don't watch anymore. All right. So let's get to it. The style of play is terrible. The Rockets and the Hornets just set the NBA record for 75 missed threes. The most ever in a regular season game, because that's what the NBA boils down to at points, is an NBA three-point shooting contest. You don't get the exciting plays at the rim often. You get the Ja Morant, the Anthony Edwards, LeBron still go through. But a lot of times you get a three-point shooting contest between guys that, if the NBA devalued the three a little bit, would be out of the NBA. It's a lot less skill involved right now. It's the main skill that people care about right now is shooting. It's just not the pretty, it's not the ball handling exposition, not attacks to the rim. It's not big dunks, big blocks at the rim. Like Warriors Cavs from, what is that, 2016? Looks like a bygone era as far as attacking the rim, shooting the mid-range, blocking at the rim, dunks on, like, that looks like an era of, yes, that looks like yesteryear. The NBA doesn't look like the NBA we grew up on. And you're getting, you have a group of individuals with, to me, probably one of the shorter attention spans in history as far as a generation, growing up on a league now that has no highlights. Three-point shooting is boring to watch repeatedly. It is. And if you're not a basketball lover, a basketball purist, a 90-second clip of three-pointers is boring. You swipe. You don't watch the full game. You know what I'm saying? And now the attention span is shorter. So if your product is less exciting, people are going to not watch as much. Also, you sold most of the rights to streamers. Amazon has rights. All these local different TV packages have rights. And they're only putting their games on certain channels, certain companies. And it's like, it's too hard to watch a basketball game. I'm a Pelicans fan. I live in Louisiana. I have not watched a single Pelicans second on TV unless it was TNT or ESPN. And guess what? One of the ESPN games, I was at the game covering here for Just in Time Sports. So literally, I have not watched a local TV broadcast of a game. I have not heard Antonio Daniels' voice all season. I have no idea how to watch the games. It's really difficult. Like, why are you making it that hard? And if I bought League Pass, it wouldn't work in my area because I'd be blacked out because I'm close to the Pelicans. Like I said, I haven't heard Antonio Daniels' voice all season. It's insane. It's terrible. Now, we're bad, so watching it isn't the most enjoyable thing anyway, but it's still awful that there's so much work to do to watch a game. The style of play is boring. You need to, I say, eliminate the corner three. Nick Wright's idea of making dunking worth 3 points is sounding better and better. Now, it would screw up the record books, but who gives a crap? The record books will screw when you add a three-point line. You know, the record books are skewed whenever the fastest to make the most threes, blah, 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 because not everyone's just shooting threes. So who cares? Whatever. You have a pre-three-point line and a pre-dunk worth three-point record book. It is what it is. But I think making dunking worth 3 points, I think, would bring centers back overnight. Because the big thing about a center is, you have to take Gobert off the floor. You have to take center off the floor. Like, imagine if, like, you know how dominant on how useful Jackson Hayes, Onyeka Okongwu, Jonas Valanciunas, Nikola Vucevic. I'm trying to think of some of these guys who are just either running dunk or pound centers. If a dunk is worth three, because now Steph comes out and hit a three, bang, you're playing the Warriors. Quick fast break outlet, LeBron with a dunk, bang, and Steph's three's canceled. And the dunk and the crowd went crazy because of the dunk. Now we're exciting. Now you're down three. Just imagine the end of game situations. You're down four with 10 seconds left. That's usually an automatic three because of the free throw game. I get a backdoor cut, dunk it. It's a 1-point game now. Like, that's huge. Like, that's cool to me. That would revitalize the sport to me. That'll make basketball more interesting because now a guy like Zion, oh my goodness, he's 22 points a game and all his twos counts for twos. Just imagine if he could turn some of those layups into dunks and now he's getting threes off dunks. Like, that would be insane, right? And the NBA changed before. Remember the 3-point line was shorter? And that was either Michael Jordan could shoot a three. And then they slid it back 2 years later. He couldn't shoot a three no more. And the scoring went back down. Like, they've done it before. They've done radical changes to scoring before. Dunking worth 3 points sounds better and better. Because you got to do something. The game's boring. It just is. And that's what views. It's boring and hard. It's boring and hard to find to watch. It's a bad combination. The NBA ratings are in the toilet. So, hey, I mean, that's a good idea. Eliminate 3-point line. Bring the games back to easy watching, and dunking worth three again feels cooler and cooler the more you say it. But that is all I have for the day. A great show, very football focused, but because the NBA is boring and no one wants to watch it. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend. I hope you guys are enjoying the holiday season. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.